This is the State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. Sometimes a chance encounter at a truck stop can turn out to be the stuff of great science. It happened that way for Pietor Neskreki. He was on a science expedition in South Africa when he and his companion stopped at a rest stop. And while his friends were using the bathroom, he found a bug. This particular bug was interesting because up until then, it had been totally unknown to science. It was a new species living right under everybody's noses. And that is one of the stories that fills the pages of the Best Science Writing Online 2012. It is the creation and series is created by editor Bora Zivkovic. He's the editor of the blog network at Scientific American and a professor of biology at North Carolina Wesleyan College. And he joins us now. Welcome.
Thank you.
So tell us, first of all, I guess we have to talk about the story of the truck stop bug. Tell us that story.
The story came from Rob Dunn, who is just happens to be local. He is a professor of biology here at NC State University. He told a fascinating story about a group of researchers doing research in Africa, all sorts of surveying, you know, very systematic kind of science. And then they stopped at a truck stop to, you know, bathroom break. And luck helps the prepared mind. One of them was looking around, always looking around, naturalists always look around, and spotted a bug and took pictures and took the bug, and it was identified as a new species. They got funding to go back and find more of them and try to figure out exactly how they fit.
So that's an example, really, again, there's not any real fundamental science being done there. We've just found a species we hadn't known about before. Now we get to name it and kind of add it to the collection of bugs that we now know.
Yes, serendipity helps. But then once it happens, you have to do the work, which is why you need the training and you need to persuade the powers that be that they need to fund your second trip.
So now what other kinds of stories are in this collection this year?
It is a wonderfully diverse collection of 50 essays and one poem. And what we like to do every year is actually target that kind of diversity. So there's different lengths and forms and formats and voices and styles. There is a fable in there where all the characters are fungi. A poem definitely is different.
And who qualifies for this? Because, of course, science reporting goes on all the time. There's radio, television, and print, obviously. This is restricted to online reporting. Is that right?
It is restricted to online reporting, and the world is changing. When we first started with the first book, this is the sixth annual anthology. We started specifically with essays written on science blogs. These days, that distinction between blogs and columns and articles, everything is online now. So the distinction is getting fuzzy. And actually, my job as blogs editor at Scientific American, I'm actively working on making those things fuzzy and having the traditional world and the new world learn from each other the best practices.
We kind of feel like if it's a blog associated with Scientific American, the vetting, the review process is pretty trustworthy. That's what we think and what we hope. But what about these other blogs? What do you do in terms of qualifying them to be in this volume to know that the information is accurate?
Well, there's actually a long and complicated vetting process. It is very open and transparent. There is a, you know, open for submissions. People submit their own stuff or their friends' stuff. And so last year we ended with about 900 submissions. And then Jennifer Ouellette, the guest editor for this year, and I organized all of those submissions by discipline and sent them first to a set of judges where they would judge for accuracy. So a physics post would go to a physicist. That way we can eliminate crankery and bad stuff. And then in the second round, those that passed the first round would go exactly to opposite to people who don't know that discipline in order to judge it for writing. Did I, as a physicist, understand this biology post? And then that cut it down to 50 plus, and then Jennifer and I cut it down to exactly 50.
And is there a distinction between that you make between science reporting, that is to say someone reporting on someone else's work, versus what we find in Scientific American, where I'm reporting on my own research?
Well, there is a difference. Science reporting usually covers a paper that just came out. Most of the rest of online writing, either on blogs or columns, might take a bigger picture. It might be a review. A number of articles in the book are actually quite historical. They're looking at, you know, wacky science of 19th century or early 20th century and comparing to what we know now and how we do science now. That kind of a historical context or even philosophical context is something that readers really, really like.
And as you say, you're including literature. You've got a poem in here, right, and a fable. So tell us about those, about the poem and the fable.
Well, we had quite a lot of submissions. We were openly asking for poetry. And it was not easy to pick the right poem. In the end, we ended with Sumada by Aubrey Sanders, which is just a sweet short poem.
Can you read it for us?
The whole poem? Sure.
Well, sure.
I was born a body of worlds, a carnal web of cosmic pearl, billions of stars that hold me to my bones, and when one day their cores collapse, I will shed my skin in ash and sleep among the mosses and the stone. I'll grow into the vine that licks the ruin, writhe beneath the savage moon, my scattered cinders eaten at the roots, and when the ravaged willow moans again, she will take me in her veins and shake me from her hair an astral fruit. For we forgot a fact that we once knew, the only ancient truth, the knowledge of our primal origin, that from the feral night we came as dust, born from stellar wanderlust, and unto the stars we will return again.
Bora Zivkovic reading a poem in The Best Writing, The Best Science Writing Online 2012. And you're talking about science writing. So what's the theory then behind the collection itself? What do you hope to accomplish by including all this different sort of writing?
The original idea is 6 years ago, blog was still a dirty word. People were making fun of it on op-ed pages just because the word sounds funny or something like that. It was not taken seriously. So this was a vehicle to transport the best examples of wonderful writing that's happening online and present it to the more traditional world, people who would, you know, buy a book and read a book on paper. These days, when the blogs are now taken seriously and the blogosphere has exploded, there's a lot of good writing. The goals have shifted a little bit because a lot of people are reading online, and so this is now more to showcase the styles and types of writing that are possible, especially for the more traditional journalists who have, you know, two or three types of articles they can write. It's like, hey, you can actually get out of those, you know, draw outside of the lines and look what a wonderful piece of writing you can do if you write in first person or if you write as a fungus.
And exactly.
Or well, if you write as a sperm and explain the fluid dynamics that way.
Woody Allen already did that movie. We've already seen that.
Yeah,
actually, that's an old. But to that extent, that is what I guess we have the internet to thank for when it comes to science writing, is the ability to write in different ways, not be constricted to the way scientific journals insisted on formatting your writing.
Absolutely. The web has really opened the floodgates to experimentation in kinds of writing. And the book is even limited because it's on paper, that a lot of blog posts could not be included because they depend too much on links and videos and slideshows and podcasts and images that could not be included on paper. So they were kind of disqualified by Medium, although they're absolutely fascinating posts.
But the thing that we were nervous about, and perhaps the reason blogs got such a bad name early on, was because of the fear that there was not enough vetting and not enough editorial control. Now, you say you've taken your submissions and put them out for editing, but how do we know that all the rest of those blogs out there, which haven't gone through your vetting process, are dependable?
It is like everything else. You have to learn who to trust. I mean, nobody was born automatically trusting NPR. You learn that from your parents, your colleagues, your
school. I didn't learn it from my parents, but go ahead.
So, you know, you learn which sources to trust. And these days, it's not even so much what's the banner up there, but who is the individual. I mean, even if you go to a New York Times site, there are some writers of, you know, editorials there and columnists who you trust and those that you don't. This the same way. You have to go through the process of reading a blogger for a while or digging through the archives and figuring out, okay, this person is trusted. See who else is trusting the same person, who gets who links to that person often, maybe on social media, who's gained reputation over time.
And of course, when it comes to the other question, style, this is a way of really creatively expressing and trying to describe a scientific process that can otherwise be opaque and difficult for us. So what do you think is the most creative piece in here that is also has good scientific content?
Well, I would go with a fable by Cindy Doran, where all the characters are fungi. And this is something that actually I edited for Scientific American for the guest blog. She's written other pieces for us that are more in a traditional vein. And she's had this idea, like, would you take a fable? And I said, absolutely. It was really fun working with her on it. And it really put to light, made very, very fun and readable material that may be otherwise difficult. I mean, all these Latin names of weird fungi we've never heard of. It would be probably hard to write it in a way that is not dry. So going to the opposite extreme and making it into fable actually turned all those fungi really to the life characters that were fun to read.
It put the fun in fungi, I think, is what you're saying.
That's exactly right. You said it. I didn't want to.
I don't blame you. Can you characterize or summarize that story for us?
It's hard. You just have to read it. You have to buy the book.
Okay.
Is this my job here to promote a book?
That was very wise on your part. So let me ask you this now. How has it changed? You've been doing this for 6 years. How have these submissions, how has the writing changed?
I think it's better and better. We're getting more and more submissions every year. First year, I think it was about 200 and something submissions. For the next year, and that's going to be edited by another local known to NPR here, Scott Hewler, we have more than 1,000 submissions. And I think not just that there's more of them, but the greater proportion of submitted entries are really high quality. It's getting harder and harder to cut them down to 50. We could, you know, this year probably do 2 or 3 books and all 3 would be good.
Is the online writing, do you think, having an effect on the older forms in print and in TV and radio?
I think so. It's early, it's slow, but I think a lot of traditional writers and journalists are now bloggers too. And through the daily practice of blogging, they are experimenting with other ways of writing and then transferring and translating those experiences into their more formal writing for magazines or newspapers.
Is it having an effect on the way science is done? We know that storytelling has a huge impact on the way we conduct our lives, and certainly in the social context. Does it change what happens in the lab?
I hope so. I hope so. It depends, I think, on the discipline. And I would think that some disciplines, because of the storytelling, because of what's happening online, have attracted a large audience to, for instance, citizen science projects, where they can actually participate in the scientific process, adding data, adding observation. Different projects are different in how much individual citizens are involved, are just producing data or actually involved in analysis and even writing of the final paper.
I think the truck stop bug is a pretty good example of that. There's a lot of backyard science going on around just that, isn't there?
Absolutely. There are a number of projects exactly like that.
So what are some of your other favorites from this year?
from the best science writing. I already mentioned the sperm swimming.
And that's the journey of the sperm, right?
Journey of the sperm, yeah. And it explains fluid dynamics by forcing you to imagine being a sperm and trying to swim to the egg, and what are the forces acting on you, and why.
And they don't make it easy, do they, on the sperm? I mean, it's not as easy as you think.
It's like swimming through molasses,
yeah,
which is hard. Give it a try one day. You'll drown, probably. It's hard, you know, after cutting down 900 to 50, and the other 50 are just his favorite. You know, they're all 50 are my babies. It's hard to, like, which kid is your favorite? But I can list a few. For instance, Kate Clance's explanation of what menstruation really is, actually wonderfully written.
I can think there's a whole lot of people actually who run for office who should actually read that.
They absolutely should.
Yeah.
A piece by Christy Wilcox, which is absolutely a wonderful rant, which is something that, you know, blogs are known for, and she's one of the best ranters, you know, putting into place a whole group of people who are getting stuff wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And not just wrong, but in a way... socially negative.
The aforementioned people who run for political office.
Those included, yes. a wonderful, pretty long piece by Eric Michael Johnson that takes in all sorts of anthropology and psychology to explain the behavior of humans who are rioting. And that was actually written during the London riots.
Wow. Boy, it's a fascinating collection. It's the sixth volume, and I know you're going to keep it up. Thank you very much for being on the program.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Bora Zivkovic, editor of the blog network at Scientific American, professor of biology at North Carolina Wesleyan, and he is the series editor for the Best Science Writing Online 2012. That's our program. Thanks for listening to The State of Things. Our website, stateofthings.org. This is North Carolina Public Radio. It's a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.